Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Today we're going to cover success. So let's think about this for a split second. Success actually brings up so many different subjects because you have some folks that live their life for what they perceive to be the goal of success. And some people actually just evade it because they feel like it's too stressful to achieve something. Not too many people, but the interesting thing is the definition of success is just like a snowflake for everybody, right? Completely different notion of what success is for every human being. So this episode is for those of you who feel angst every single day, whether it be all day or just a couple times a day, because in your mind, you have achieved success. We're gonna work on the myth of what that is. Success, let's look at it. There's a million ways to look at a lot of the subjects covered on this show. I always try to pick a couple big course views on something so that we can kind of like, the tiny vignettes of what it could be are obvious and something you can go down with on your personal time, right? In terms of a rabbit hole, right? But why cover the subject before we jump in? The obvious reason is I want you to have as much success as you can possibly have in your life. So in my travels, success has taken on several different meanings. There are the weird ones that I actually was raised into, that there were the weird precepts I had as a kid. You know, I never really had being famous as a notion. I did think about doing things that might make me famous, but never ever for the fame itself. But I know obviously plenty of kids that live for that today, and you know, you can never ever get famous just wanting to be famous. You have to have a skill set. You have to have something that is interesting. I mean, I can't say never ever, but it won't last, and it's really not real until you come up with something real to offer society, right? The other one is to get rich, right? And rich, when you're young and sort of ignorant to what that means, it's, buying a fancy house, buying a fancy car, fancy things. And then once you have all those things, you soon realize that that wasn't a really intense goal. It wasn't a goal that's really going to make you happy. And then you realize money, if nothing else, buys you freedom in a way, right? Depending on how you can adjust, how much money you can make, and the time you're going to make that money. Because at some point, you're successful, and either you sit on that money and invest it, or you have enough, and you simply live comfortably. Now, everyone's always investing their cash, right? Some folks can never get enough. They love the hunt of making money. They like the money as well. But overall, if given the choice of having the money or the hunt, I know some folks that would take the hunt over the money. And then I think there's the sane individuals that have the best definition for success, because those other two aren't so good. And that's someone who is looking to create a family, looking to create a life that is just beneficial to mankind. They're good to themselves, they're good to other people. And they just live in perpetual balance with the resources that they have available. They might sit on a porch and watch cars go by, might whittle some wood, they might go fish. They might sit and read a book. They live a very basic, normal life. And they are able to keep themselves in an ecosystem with other human beings and such that they're always enriching someone, helping someone who's down, that kind of stuff, right? And that's the contrast I really want to bring up in this episode, which is I want to get down to the very kernel of that feeling that if you're struggling with success, with whatever definition you may or may not have, right? You may actually feel like you haven't succeeded, but when I ask you what would you need to do to feel like you're a success, you have no clue. Happens all the time. Don't feel bad. But we want to get the angst out of you completely. You know, I feel angst just thinking about people's angst. There's this weird thing that we do as human beings, and that is to lust for something that is sort of an enigma. You just feel like there's something better out there. The chances are that if you are brought up in an area of the world which is nice, it is balanced. Like I grew up in a really nice, balanced community. I mean, amazing community. All my relatives were in one town at one point. I was so lucky. And I didn't know that there was any other combination for quite a few years. I was the one moving away. No one else moved away. But if you come from a really tight community, there's usually this really weird thing that occurs that is not exactly directly associated with success, but it becomes almost a precursor to whatever you end up doing. I'll give you an example. I moved from the Midwest to California. I bounce around a little bit, but I end up in this little town called Camarillo, which is in the northern tip of Southern California, just before you head up to Santa Barbara. Beautiful town. And I got into the old kind of 70s, 80s version of Camarillo. And I say old because now it's 2017. But it was just bustling. A lot of construction, a lot of great restaurants going in, great, but a lot of places were already there. It was really cool. And I meet a bunch of great kids who grew up on the same block together. And if they didn't grow up on the same block together, they grew up within 6 miles of each other. It's like a township, right? And what really blows my mind, all right, is that, you know, I live with a family. I'm trying to think, I had a guy who was kind of my age. I was in a church community at the time. He was in love with the girl. I had two brothers down the street. There was another girl down the street. Who was part of the group that we're in. And now I think every single one of them lives in Texas because they went to Abilene, Texas, like this Christian college there, and they all picked up their stuff from sunny, beautiful California with every amenity you could possibly imagine, from beaches to amusement parks to art to music to everything, design. And they all packed up and they went to Texas and they stayed. And as a person from Kansas, I thought, why the hell would you want to go to the Midwest when you live in literally one of the most gorgeous areas? And Camarillo just is at the tip of Malibu. So when you hit the coast and you start going south, I mean, it's just a few miles and you're at Zuma Beach. And that's where they filmed Planet of the Apes finale, right? It's one of the most beautiful beaches on planet Earth. The whole coast is amazing. And it's because their minds had a pattern that they were bored with. And so they moved to a place that was completely different. And I did exactly the same thing. I love where I'm from, but California had, you know, palm trees and great weather. I don't have any allergies here. I mean, it's a fabulous place. Plus, work-wise, there's just infinite jobs if you're willing to apply yourself. So I think that's cool. And the people are awesome, of course. All right. Why go down that little digression? I bring that to your attention because there's a little seed in you, depending on where your angst is sort of vectored, where it's pointed, right? If you are sort of in an unknown feeling where you're like, geez, I don't like where I live. I don't know. I feel like you're in some rural town somewhere. It doesn't matter if you're in Europe or America or whatever. And you know there's a big city out there. Let me throw you some words of caution about that. And give you some encouragement at the same time. this grass is greener thing is always tempered by reality, right? Sometimes it is. It's greener where you want to go. But I guarantee you, you're going to be leaving behind some green that you can't take with you. Some things that you, cultural things you can't take with you. Food, you can't take your relatives with you most of the time. So they're left behind. And you go to this new land, and it's plentiful. This is exactly my life, right? I came to California, and man, I lucked out on a level that was crazy. I just picked up the right newspaper, applied for the right jobs, and magic happened, right? But now, what I left behind was tough. I left behind all my family. And the elderly grandparents that I had, you know, which weren't that elderly when I left, but, you know, they were just approaching, entering their 70s about the time I left. You know, I'd go back to see them a couple times a year if I could. But they passed away. They got sick and they passed away, and I wasn't there. I went to their funerals. But no matter how I sliced it, I couldn't just be hanging out. I couldn't support them. I couldn't keep them entertained. And so one by one they expired, and one by one I went to their funerals except for one. And that's a huge price to pay depending on how close you are to your families. But sometimes where you live just doesn't have the jobs, at least the ones that you're interested in, so you have to pick up and move. The one thing I want to get into your brain before we really start is some more fundamental thoughts here, is that, you know, there's a reason why money's called currency. There's a reason why currents wash up against banks, right? Banks are the moment when a current stops for a split second. They've picked these terms for very specific reasons, in English language at least, because money has to continue flowing, otherwise it has no value to those who accumulate it. You can't collect interest without moving your money around. You can't. You may think in your brain it's in a bank, but they've taken your money and they've moved it into all kinds of different things, right? Sometimes some pretty crappy mechanisms. Well, you are a piece in society that needs to move around if you need change. You could move around inside your tiny community. You could move a little more rural to your community, go to the big city every once in a while. Or maybe, if you do your math and if you look at where you think you want to go, or if you're completely lost and simply unhappy, we're going to get to that too, because I don't want you to have any false definitions of being unhappy and then you run off and destroy your life. But you may need to pick up from where you are and go to a more populated area with better job prospects. But let me just throw this at you. The amount of people I've helped get jobs and re-engineer their lives is in the dozens. What's fascinating about my participation in their life is that when I sit down with them, like they're asking for help, and this is none of you guys, these are my close friends, they have no clue what they want to do. Now, some folks are smart, they have no clue, and so they sit and they think about it, and they figure out where they need to be. Might take weeks to figure it out, might take months, might take a couple years. But in the end, they don't make any moves until they know what they want to do. But in the meantime, they are personally trying everything they possibly can within their area. They're reading books, they're doing trade skills, trying to program, trying to draw, whatever. Whatever the hell that might be. But even after they find it, what's interesting is very few folks believe that you need to plan your life. Or that after you've had your first plan at 18, or right after you graduate from college at 22, that they don't feel like they need to plan again. It's just going to work out. And yeah, sometimes it works out. You know, my big epiphany when I came to California and found work very easily and very quickly was that I had this saying. By the age of 19, I was saying this saying. I said, look, I think the motto of my life is, survival is easy, success is a drag. And what I meant by that was, when I came from the Midwest, they said if you didn't have a college education, you simply were not going to be employable at all, ever in your life. You're going to dig ditches or whatever. You're going to die in a ditch. Well, the reality was that if you apply yourself, and it, well, hell, if you just go back 100 years in history, nobody had these degrees, you know. But that, you know, you might think in your mind, well, the skill sets and the jobs weren't as complex as they are today. Yes, you're correct. Touche. However, do not forget the ability for a human being to teach themselves without a college, to get books, to get resources and learn something without walking into an institution and, you know, creating incredible debt, right? So even though the jobs were simpler, doesn't matter. Men were simpler, the jobs were simpler, and so they're able to teach themselves that job. Now, the average IQ is a lot higher, well, in some respects, and so they're able to ingest much more complicated information and get up to snuff, right? I mean, think about it. A cell phone is complicated to configure for your average baby boomer, right? So is a computer. So when you think about the kids that are helping their parents, they're doing all kinds of complicated stuff on a daily basis. And so them jumping off into an employable career is not that hard to believe, right? But the point of what I'm trying to say here at this particular level is that you need to plan your life. And I can tell you right now, it can be the most fun thing you've ever done. Especially if you've been, again, I'm going to beat up this metaphor, the pinball and the pinball machine, getting kicked around and bumped around and flipped around. The second that you sit down and plan your life, you're suddenly taking back the reins. You're suddenly saying, you know what, I'm not taking this anymore. I mean, you might have to take it a couple more weeks or months or whatever till you get your plan executed. But in the end, you see the light at the end of the tunnel. And you have a goal. That's where we need to get you, depending on where you are. And again, if you're fine, you just need a little fine-tuning adjustments. Well, you can forget this state, these areas, their course adjustments, but maybe tuck it in the back of your brain just in case you find yourself in that situation or you get the freedom to redesign your life. You're completely happy and you just want to maybe start from scratch or can, you know, start from scratch and reorganize what you're already doing. You say, like, I'm in this business already, but I feel like it's kind of chaotic. I want to have it cleaned up from, it's like when you clean up your house, right? You're not moving to a different house. You're simply just going in and maybe rearranging some furniture, getting glare off the TV from the front door that's opening up, letting the sun in at 5 o'clock, you know. You're just making things better, refining things, right? But let's look at what success is, because as I've mentioned on several episodes, you know, I've lived a very bizarre life and I still do. I don't have things that the guy across the street has. He might be looking at me saying, God, I wish I was in that guy's life. And we're looking at each other. And I think that what would happen is both of us might try out each other's lives. We'd want to keep certain aspects of what we got from each other's lives. But in the end, we might want our own lives back. I don't know. What's important to me is that people understand that the simplest things of life can be the most successful things in life. But unfortunately, if you watch television, which is now Hollywood and television together, I hate to even say go to movies. I don't know that many people that go to movies anymore. But you're conditioned away from thinking that some of the most amazing, what might be referred to as mundane things, can be actually incredibly rewarding. Now, the other part is that you can work really hard, slave on something, and succeed. And you love it. You have this euphoric feeling. And you look around at the rest of the world who comes to see it or whatever, and you think, wow, they can't even, they probably don't understand what I just did. I wish they did. But it's just too much. It's too much to explain things, right? You know, every time I write a script and people read it and they love it, they look at it and they go, wow, this was 2 hours worth of reading at the quickest. And even though I enjoyed it, there must have been a tremendous effort to get all this organized and get it all to work perfectly inside the script, right? And so they enjoy the labor that I put into it. But let me kind of, I want to pull back here for 1 second and suggest something that you guys have probably already felt, but let's say that we have person A and person B, and person A works on projects. They're very intense projects. They take a lot of time away from family, if there is one. And then person B just raises a family, goes to work, has some great kids, has a husband or wife or what have you, and they are more of the spectator. They're down inside the crowd. That person A is up on the stage most of the time. Now, what's interesting is if they both are successful with what they're doing, there's a successful arc and crescendo to their life, sort of. The first person gets everything in a big boom, right? You work really, really hard. You're totally isolated most of the time. You got your business partners or what have you, your muse that inspires you or what have you, your small feedback team. And if it succeeds, all right, there's a big odd that it won't succeed. It's always a gamble. If it succeeds, you get this horrendous rush of success and accolades and maybe fame, maybe money, right? You work on an album or something, you know, for a really long time, what have you. Person B is living a solid life, right? They get up in the morning, they get their kids up, they fight them to get them dressed and fed and off to school. They go off to work, they come home, they're pooped, they got the kids, they run the whole ritual of food, bathing, homework, bed, and then you get a little bit of time to yourself and you go to bed. Maybe you got a spouse you share your time with. And to you, it's this crazy grind, right? You're investing in the long haul of the entire algorithm of family. Now, deep down inside, you know you're building a family. You are building a family that will give you incredibly, almost, I mean, it always comes with trials and tribulations, but overall, you're creating a more guaranteed algorithm of success as long as you enjoy your family. The big explosion of happiness that comes from these type A people that are going off, and I don't mean type A as in anal, but just this first group of folks, they get it all in one giant rush, and they don't get it every single time. The second group gets similar things where some days are tougher than other days. Sometimes you don't agree with your spouse. Sometimes your kid's going through a bad stage or whatever. But overall, you kind of get this average mean of positivity. So imagine it's the same amount of energy. It's just stretched over time. But in the end, the second group, actually, again, as long as your kids stay alive, right? They're able to have this family and their grandkids and all these crazy wild experiences where then they're not on the hook anymore, because as soon as the kid gets out of college, they should be supporting themselves best they can. And then you kind of get to coast. And hopefully you got a decent enough job that you don't run out of money or something like that, which unfortunately happens more often than it should these days. So there are these two different lifestyles, and I really think that, you know, there's a few hybrids in between probably, right? But you have to make a choice as to what life you want to live. And I think that you have to look at your level of codependency for other human beings before you make that choice. If you're fairly codependent, and I don't mean, you know, that is a derogatory thing. I just mean you understand you love companionship. You need to be socially engaged. You need a hug every day. You know, you don't like sleeping alone. You feel like you have something to share, and if no one's around, then you're sort of just sitting there wasting away. Doesn't mean you have to have a family of 10. Doesn't mean you have to have any kids. It just means you would like a companion. Well, then you have to be very careful about which life you pick. And if you want the first category of really, you know, maybe you're a writer, maybe you're an inventor, whatever the case might be, but whatever you do requires a lot of alone time, you're going to have to be very strategic about your partner that you pick. And you're going to have to communicate with that partner. And let me give you some advice. Do not pick a partner exactly like you without being very careful. The best partnerships I've ever seen in my life are partners where you have an individual who's just a monster entrepreneurial person. They make pretty much most of the money in the family and the partnership. And the other person is perhaps an accountant, a money person, someone who can help facilitate the business or at least get out of the way or provide the relief, the mental relief that this other person needs as a result of working really hard. One of the toughest things you could ever do, I'll just put this little caution out, and for those of you who are younger, I wish I had heard this information a long time ago. Let me tell you. If you want to be an entrepreneur, you have to be careful to engage another entrepreneur as a partner in your life, meaning, you know, a partner that you are in a relationship with, that you live with, what have you. Because if you bring two entrepreneurs together, and there's a definition of an entrepreneur, right? You have your fully established business person, which is really a person who's graduated out of being an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur is usually, I mean, there's all kinds of definitions for this. For the sake of this particular episode, think of an entrepreneur in this designation as someone who's attempting to be successful in what they're doing. Once they're successful, they only take back the entrepreneurial designation if they sell that business or they've got it off to the side, now they're diving into a brand new venture. But because every venture can suck you dry, all your money, all your time, you could lose everything, you could lose your mind or whatever, you have to be careful blending your life with another person that's in this mode. If you're both in that mode, the problem is that you're both having your patience pool ground down. You're both suffering off and on. And again, you could be really lucky that you're really taking on an existing business. You really lucked out. Maybe your family sells real estate. You never got into it. Then you become an entrepreneur. You take over the business, and it's really all established. You got a name already established. The paperwork pipeline's established. Whatever. So that's sort of just like taking over someone else's business and not really being an entrepreneur. So that's why I can tell you that the couples that I've seen that are complementary to each other, one is an entrepreneur, one works a 9-to-5 job, that works a hell of a lot better. So you want to set your foundation up properly before you try to move too deep into something that's very difficult. Now, a lot of you are young enough, you haven't found your partner yet, and you're just hunkering down for your own business. That's a great place to be, trust me. What I always tell folks is, today they tell you to be a child forever, you know? You're not to really engage your life until you're in your 30s. And that's really kind of an unofficial generalization, but we have man-children now, right? Women get pretty serious pretty quickly, but the guys really screw it up by waiting too damn long to get their shit together. So, again, just in setting up the foundation for the success algorithm here, you know, you can take risks if you're really going to go balls to the wall in this first version here where you're going to be more isolated, take more risks. You want to do that stuff in your 20s for a couple reasons. One, you're young and your energy levels are extremely high. When you eat food, a lot of you don't gain weight. You can just run it out. Your calorie conversion of sugars in your body are just at an all-time high. Two, usually life costs a lot less when you're younger. You're willing to drive a shitty car. You're willing to live in a one-bedroom apartment or a one-bedroom studio or rent a room from someone's house or stay in a garage. Hell, I rented a garage for 2.5 years when I first came out. It wasn't my first thing I did, but when I got to Camarillo, it was converted into a home inside the garage, but, you know, it had a garage door behind my bed. My bed was a fold-out sofa, you know. And his family was gracious enough to refund my rent when I was done. I guess I'm gonna give a prop out. I seldom do this. They'll have no idea I did it unless somebody tells them. But there's a company in Oxnard, California called the Wiggins Forklift Company, and I don't know if they still own the place or not, but it's named after their surname. But I had a chance to live with the Wiggins for 2.5 years in Camarillo. and they were some of the sweetest people on planet Earth. And so, you know, when I say I got fortunate, I was fortunate. And it was interesting because it was right around the time that I had been laid off from work because the tax company that makes, you know, TurboTax had lost a bunch of cash and had to lay us off the day after tax day. This was like April 16th, 1989. 2 days later, I got my first job drawing video games. And so I lived with the Wiggins for a couple years, did my video games, then actually left that industry for a really short bit, went back to the tax people for, I don't know how many months, probably about 8 months, and then I moved to the Bay Area after the first recession of George Bush Sr. completely destroyed California's sort of mini little Silicon Beach down here in the Ventura County area, Simi Valley area. But let's get into it. Let's get into the beacon that draws you towards either a success that you think you completely understand, which is great, but we need to check it, you know? Was it Ice Cube said you gotta check yourself before you wreck yourself, right? He's absolutely right. He checked his life and he's fallen uphill his whole life. Incredibly talented guy. Because he planned his life, you know? I just talked about this in the last episode, this whole idea of, you know, taking inventory of your mind and making sure that what you have in your mind is what you think you want, is what you put in there, not someone else. Now, I will tell you, you can actually have some wonderful moments by riding on a wave of absolute bullshit. You know, as someone, you know, when I first moved to California, they said, why did you move here? And I thought back and I thought, well, you know, my whole life, every great movie was paying homage to California. It looks amazing on paper when I looked through the television set. I said, I saw the video for the music, the song I Love L.A., which written by the very famous writer whose name escapes me at the moment. And, you know, I saw commercials, just one awesome world after another in fictitious settings. And I guess that's why I'm here. And everything that I do is here. It's not where I live, because I'm way ahead of the game from where I live, right? So yours truly has been guilty of sort of following these fictitious storylines and promises of, you know, Los Angeles. So it can be beneficial. But my big thing was to create things. You know, people ask me what turns me on in the world the most, what motivates me the most, because I'm always talking about what motivates other people, and I just look at them and I go, I blow minds. That's what I want to do with my life. Everything I do has got to have that emotion of, oh my God, I didn't see this coming and now it's here. This is awesome, right? And you know, I can tell you, I'll make things that millions of people have interacted with, a video game that goes up on Yahoo Games that literally 60 million people play a month, down to I made a piece of software for the local college near me for a friend of mine. And this woman that I was helping, this poor woman had this job for 15 years. She's 63 years old, and she's an amazing woman who was mastering a lot of technology to do her job. It was really interesting. But when I got done replacing that system, she was using 5 applications in a giant pipeline in a circle, just horribly manual, error-prone to death. And when I handed her the solution, the first day she got frustrated. She thought, she was kind of confused because it was so simple. She thought for sure I'd forgotten something massive about what she needed to do. It took her a couple days to figure it out. After sitting down, you know, and teaching her everything. But even though I showed her the paradigm of it going from 5 pieces to 1 piece, from 100 clicks to 1 click, you know, I'm being facetious a little bit there, but dozens of clicks to 1 click, her having to think about things and keep herself from making mistakes so that she wouldn't lose her job was now an automated process. She still needed to participate in the process, of course. I didn't replace her or anything. But 2 days later, I came back to the office and she was quiet. She was looking right at me. And she said, you know, she's 63. She's no dummy, right? And she said, you know, I couldn't conceive of how easy you made this. And I'm sorry I got a little testy there, but she goes, this is amazing. You know, this, I didn't think this could be so easy. And she kind of got choked up. You know, she got real close to that kind of almost cryy thing in her mouth and her throat, you know. And that's the other form of blowing people away that's wonderful. You just blew away one person. You did a, I did 8 months of work to simplify this woman's life for the rest of her career. She can now retire with this tool. It's a wonderful thing. So that's why I always say to you guys, you need to know the theme of why you exist more than you need to know some reward at the end of the tunnel. The rewards will come as long as you focus on what it is you love to do, right? You know, I don't think anyone can, like a musician can't sit down and say, boy, I want to be famous. Boy, I want to have a bunch of people worship me on stage. I want a lot of money. You can't really, and then you all of a sudden sit down with your instruments and write the best song in the world. It then achieves all those goals. Of the humble, humble folks I have met out of the rock and roll industry of the mid-80s, or the whole decade of the 80s, who are unbelievably successful. I met a couple in the 90s. They are humble, and they are super talented, and it just was a byproduct. Fame and money was a byproduct of their skill set. Now, very few folks let it get to their head, and very few folks can survive after they let it get to their head, because they become obnoxious human beings. We all know the legacy handful of, you know, actors that do this, the handful of musicians that do this, but they're known for that because it's weird that they ever got there, that they couldn't appreciate what they were given, right? The other thing I find is that people who are worried about success and who use that word to describe their life and they try to take action, right? They're trying to plan, that sort of thing. Sometimes you move a little too quickly. I am definitely a person that for the first probably 35 years of my life, I would rush in pretty damn fast to something. I'd have an idea, and I wake up in the morning with having never thought of this concept by whatever, 2 or 3 o'clock, 2 or 3 in the afternoon or my evening, I will have had this epiphany and I'll just jump in. I'll write the code, I'll draw the artwork, whatever. All the above. And the problem is that probably 50% of the time that would work beautifully. The other 50% of the time I didn't plan enough and I immediately ran into some fundamental problem that I didn't design around, and so I have to throw away almost everything I did up until the point I found the problem. An important digression might be, so you can understand this process just a little bit further. When I teach kids how to draw, you'll get, usually, most kids want to be done as quick as possible to get the alkylate and the dopamine rush of approval from me. They'll rush up, I'm done, and they literally have gone as fast as they possibly can because they want that little juice. And, you know, at first you might be encouraged to give them a big thumbs up, especially if they've never drawn anything before and their parents are kind of concerned they don't have an artistic bone in them. You're like, oh my God, that's amazing. And you might reinforce like that a few times. But very quickly, after a few reinforcements, you need to start laying down this notion that drawings take a lot longer than a few seconds. Trying to get, and it depends on what age the child is, but trying to get a 9-year-old to draw one picture for 1 hour, well, that's tough, right? You have to do it next to them so they understand. And you might end up drawing next to them and taking a really long time on one picture while they're just sawing through paper. We are the same way as adults, but just in a different capacity, especially when we're talking about success. We want to be there already, don't we? I mean, especially if you start re-engineering your life in, say, your mid-30s or above. Oh my God, you know, I've been doing this forever. Well, in the end, the truth of the matter is that you actually have more patience than you did. You do, regardless if you acknowledge it or not. You've got more patience to plan better. What I like to do with my life at times is to take all the moving parts and pieces and even, you know, just the static pieces and parts that I have access to. Maybe I make skill sets on the left and, you know, people that I know, industries that I'm connected to, and technology that I understand on the right side. And then I start trying to bring them together, do the old Xanadu rock and roll and country, you know, Osmond family thing, right? You have to be over 40 to get all that. But I bring it together and I find if there's any commonalities. And then what you're doing is you're sort of doing alchemy with what you're capable of engaging with this life at this point in time. And you can whip up a whole formula to make yourself happy. And the chances are, if you really get your pieces and parts down, you know, it's like, let me give you more of an example so that you don't get lost in the metaphor. Let's say you have the ability to craft things, and you're craft with wood, and you're a painter. Maybe you're not a fine art painter, but you can do some nice things with paint. And over here, you have a bunch of stores downtown that sell those kind of items, that if you work wood and paint them to look cool or have some sort of functionality, this shop that's downtown can sell them. So the rookie would go and make a bunch of these things and take it down to the store and beg them to carry them. But the next step up from rookie, a person who's made the mistake before, will go actually down to the shop and say, you know, what kind of stuff do you sell? Where do you get your stuff from? How much do you pay? Would you be interested if I could make this? And you show them a drawing. And maybe it's 10 different things that you can make. I can really make anything that you need, but if you're paying too much for that item, or you think there might be some sort of made in America or made in whatever country you're from, bump to your sales, if that's what you could claim about it, and you can say, yeah, a guy right down the street makes them. I can be that guy, or I could be that girl. And they give you the thumbs up, and then you go buy your supplies. Maybe if you can sign some contract or paperwork, that'd be great. But a lot of times when you're beginning, you have to take the risk without a lot of paperwork. And then you hone it out with those folks. You find out what works and what doesn't work. You shouldn't make a bunch of these things. You should make a couple of these things. Take it down there and see how they pan out. Create a demand without losing a bunch of money in how you're doing it today. Because what if you made 20? And someone comes down there and looks at it and goes, oh my God, you know, this is pretty cool, but it's missing the thing that I like that the other brand has. And you forgot the other thing, and it's something you can't add to it after you make it. And you go back down there and none of your stuff sold, and the vendor says, you know, well, if you, or the retailer says, you know, if you had this thing on there, I didn't realize it was on there when you brought yours in, didn't realize it was missing, I could have sold every single one of these. And you're like, well, I'm out of money. And I made all these wrong, is that what you're saying? Yeah. You might get angry, you might blow up. It's not their fault. So again, just start carefully. But now imagine this. You start that relationship and you make the right product and it sells. It doesn't sell like gangbusters or anything, but it sells pretty good. Well, obviously we've got the internet out there. Now you can start perhaps selling it also online. Probably not to the market where the retailer is, so you don't want to blow out their sales, but you get to sell direct. If you can master the retail and master the online and really refine your product, don't leave it the same unless it's blowing up on you like a pet rock or something. But if there's just more refinements, you're making them better, you're making them out of better material, you reduce your cost, you find better places to buy your supplies, your paint, your wood, whatever, then you could go outside of the region where that retailer has scope, go to the next city over, next town over, and you just keep engaging retailers that sell this thing that you make. But you've already developed it and honed it locally. You've kept your risk down. You've excited yourself. Maybe you took the product way beyond what the competition does. So now you walk in the door and you've redefined what success is to the retailer. Well, I make this thing. Oh, well, I already sell those things. Okay, wait, check this out. Does yours have this little widget on here? What does that do? Oh, well, you know, when you're doing this and that, this little thing handles this little contingency. It's a pain in the ass. No, I don't, mine don't do that. Well, now they do. All right, well, I'll just leave like, you know, 6 of them here. You just sell them on consignment. I'll come back in a week. We'll see how you're doing. Come back in a week. Hell, 4 days goes by, they've already sold them, they're calling you up because you left a business card inside one of them. All right, you see how it works, right? But I'm not trying to make an episode that's trying to tell you exactly how to start a business. What I want to do is make sure that you understand that the simplest things can be the most wonderful things. Because there's a bunch of people telling you that you're not successful. And, you know, it's sort of frustrating because they don't know you. It's like me telling you how to believe in God. I'm telling you what I believe and why I believe it, and I might use an F-bomb here and then get all passionate about it. But in the end, I'm really not telling you how to change your beliefs or form your beliefs about God. I'm just telling you my own argument about it. So someone trying to tell you how to specifically succeed as an imperative, you've got to follow what I'm saying, otherwise you're going to fail. That's being very presumptuous about who you are as a person. I had an interesting experience. I'll say this without mentioning too many proper nouns and names, but there are a bunch of groups in Los Angeles that attempt to make your life better. And you join up to their groups and you go to their classes and all this other stuff. And some of them help some people and the same group doesn't help others, right? But I went down for a friend of mine and had a conversation. You know, I'm just kind of as a guest. And of course, they always think you're going to sign up immediately. And what's interesting about it is that some people are missing things in their lives that you're not missing. And so they don't understand how you could possibly have this thing already. But they think that they're broken and they're going to get it from these classes. And most of the time it's so rudimentary to their personality that a class doesn't really help. It's just a reality, right? But I sat in this chair, this like conference room chair, and this dude starts talking to me. You know, he's one of the big kind of head evangelists of this particular course. And he has no idea I do this show and that I get really deep and cerebral and that I don't have this average life, because he used to kind of talking to people that are sort of lost in life, I guess. I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean they haven't found what they want to do with their life. He was one of them, and he found a lot of benefit from this course, so that's cool for him. But he kept talking to me, and he was digging and digging and digging and trying to, like, surprise me with epiphanies, you know. And I'm like, well, I have a YouTube show. At one point, I was like, I got a YouTube show, and I got an episode about that. And I got an episode about that, too. And I got an episode about this. And then, you know, of course, on this show, we go a lot deeper than an average conversation. So it started to frustrate him that he just couldn't find problems. And, you know, and so he started going with absolute generalizations to try and make me fail in the conversation, which is to say, you know, is your life perfect? You know, part of me just wanted to go, fuck you, dude, and your stupid bullshit lowbrow techniques of trying to make me feel broken so I'll sign up to your shitty class, right? But I kept my composure. But I did tell him, I believe I told him, I said, I can see what you're trying to do here. I said, obviously you're projecting your own problems on me. You feel like you're broken and you've been trying to fix yourself for a long time and you haven't fixed yourself. So your perception of everyone else in the world is you're projecting the fact that you think we're all broken because you can't fix you. You can't fix you, right? So you're trying to, you know what I'm saying. And it kind of stopped him in his tracks, and he kind of, you know, gave it the 60 seconds of courteous nodding, and then, oh, I got to talk to this person over here. I'll be right back, right? And of course, he's gone. But that little technique that guy was doing on me in this little class, I think happens a lot. And again, if you talk to individuals that are successful in their own mind, you know, we can always dream up something better. And that's a good thing, not a bad thing. So a lot of times you'll run into people, well, like if you ran into me, right? We're here talking right now. Well, I've succeeded in virtually everything I've ever tried, right? Virtually. But I can always dream something else up. And so if you meet me at a smoke lounge or a restaurant or in public or whatever, and you start telling me about your life, you're like, well, you know, I'm really trying to figure this damn thing out. I got a lot of skills and I've done a few things and I've even done some things that are amazing. I've succeeded too. But I'm sort of in a rut, I'm sort of in a writer's block of my own life. And it just, maybe talking to you will just kind of shake things out of me, right? Of course, I go after your themes. Like I said, you know, I always say, well, what turns you on the most? What makes you get out of bed, right? A good complimentary episode to this one is How to Get a Job, which is way back in season one. Someone just commented on it and said he really liked it. And I was like, oh, man, I haven't seen this episode in a long time. And I watched it, and it's one of my finer hours. But if you run into someone successful, they don't try to tear you down to build you up, right? Now, you know, I ran into a guy the other day who, I only see him about once every quarter, and I see him at this place, and he will show up drunk. Not quite falling down drunk. He still drives his car, which is really scary. But he comes in, he's kind of slurry, and the thing is you look at him, he looks great. He looks really tight in his clothing, he's a handsome gentleman, not stupid at all. But he's drinking because, and he told me, you know, his life has been tough for about 5 years solid, so he's drinking. I tried to get him onto cigars. I said, look, why don't you save your money, man? If you want to calm down and talk to people, I said, you need social interaction. You know, you don't need drinking interaction, right? And I think, you know, I haven't seen him since. I was hoping he'd stumble back in one way or another. But we talked, and I know him enough. I've seen him probably 4 or 5 times and had some very detailed conversations about his life and his skill set. And he came back, and even though he's tipsy now, by the time I got, you know, got done with the conversation, and we're in the parking lot just kind of saying goodbye for the evening, and he's looking right at me. He's got the biggest eyes, man. He's staring right at me. And I'm just reminding him of who he is because I know him that well. And I made some suggestions about, you know, why don't we just change this one little thing here, because he's complaining that he's drinking too much. And I said, fine, at least you know. So why don't you just do me a favor and try this other thing? Try at least coming in and talking to some of us, because we've all been there. And when you talk to people who have been there, you know. You know that they've been there. Because there's just a look, and there's a phraseology and a methodology and a tone to the voice of whether or not you're talking to someone who's BSing you. But what he's doing is, I believe he's trying to go for the big lottery ticket, the big payout at the end of the day, right? The thing is if you think about a lottery ticket formula to life, you're going to do this one thing, and then you're going to make a ton of money, and then you'll be completely out of the game. Be able to do whatever you want with life. Go wherever you want. Eat whatever you want to do. All those things. Have the fancy car, fancy house. That's asking a lot of the universe, isn't it? That's almost like asking the universe to balance a galaxy on the tip of a needle. Yeah, I guess it could happen. But probably not likely. It's probably best that one just hunker down. Find something you love that generates money. Usually if you love something, and again, it's a little tough if you play video games all the time and that's what makes you happy. There are jobs where you play video games. You just need to look at how much money you need and see if a QA job, a quality assurance job, is going to get you that kind of paycheck. But maybe if that, you know, makes you happy, makes you thrilled with life, maybe you'll take the studio apartment or rent the room from somebody so you can play video games all day long. But I've rarely met a kid who likes to play video games a lot that doesn't have a side dream of creating them, of designing them, right? But they don't think they can for some reason. They think there's a special gene pool. And I will say there's definitely a special level of attention you must pay to things to get there. It's really funny, when I went back for some of my class reunions back in my hometown, there's a lot of families there that... there's nothing special. I mean, there's special things, of course, but there's nothing like with the standard arc of fame and money and all these things. That doesn't happen in my hometown, right? But I will tell you this. I saw dozens and dozens of my friends from high school who never left the little tiny town that I came from, who have big, beautiful homes, every amenity in that house that you could possibly imagine, good, intelligent, sort of rule-abiding children, right? who have promising educations and hobbies. They're going to go right into college with the major they know about. And they didn't subscribe, I think, to the bullshit. And so they lived, and live to this day, a wonderful life. And I think that, you know, with this episode, it's sort of aimed at two different groups of people. It all starts out with, you're in the group that is in angst about your success. That's the whole group. Within that group, there are folks out there that I think should really rethink how wonderful life's going to be if you have this one in a million thing. I think that you might want to resell yourself the notion that there's this lottery ticket out there waiting for you. Again, you can't make the AC/DC album Back in Black by sitting there in the studio going, we're going to make an album that makes tons of money. That's our objective here. Hell no. They sat down and said, we want to make the best rock and roll songs on planet Earth. I think that album has like 8 or 10 songs on it, but it's the best rock and roll album of all time. Per capita of each song and its impact on society, how many times you've heard it in public, there's none better. And they have reaped the rewards for creating such an amazing album. Of course, they had great tunes before, they had great tunes after, so obviously they're doing something right with the overall configuration of the band itself. But you don't get good at anything if you're not focused on the exact thing that you're trying to get good at. And how can you get good at any skill if all you're focusing on is the external reward that is money as a result of doing it? You know, I've seen the tech industry that I've been close to evolve like crazy. And I've seen folks, I've had my friends and employees, which I'll, you know, you employ them for a little while, then they leave for whatever reason, and you loop back with them later. Hey, how you doing, man? Well, I'm totally into this. Well, why are you into that? Well, because it is the industry standard. I'm going to make a ton of money. I'm going to get the biggest paycheck for this. And I'm going to tell you, only a small percentage of people that ever tell me that line ever really succeed in that new industry, in that new thing. Because what they're doing is as they're trying to learn and focus on what they're doing, they're spending too much time in their brain focusing on the reward at the end of the tunnel. Now, sometimes that can be exactly what you need, right? Tony Robbins teaches you to repaint, you know, remap positive and negative, and then where your positive is, you got to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I believe that's exactly what he says, and use that as a beacon to do the right thing, right? I want to live in a world with a bunch of really happy people. And I think that the reality of the human body is that you can't live in a constant orgasm your whole life. You can't do it for a minute, right? Your O face can't stay on your face forever. You're going to have to come down to a beautiful average mean of happiness that is sustainable with the amount of energy your body's going to metabolize out of food, and you know what dopamine and adrenaline can drop into your mind on a routine basis. There's got to be peaks and valleys within your positive stream, so you're still over neutral, but there's going to be these moments when you get a little bump of positivity and that didn't work. Well, that's okay. We always just change our strategy and create a new peak, right? You know, I've been in enough households where the parents had tons of kids, 5 kids, 6 kids. And you look at the whole room and like I've dated girls with beautiful families and there's always these backstories on the way over to the first meeting of the parents. Well, you know, this sister was really strange here and this brother was kind of weird there and they have different fathers and boy, my parents used to fight a lot, but now they don't fight anymore and all this other stuff. I get all this backstory of the struggle of bringing together this amazing family. And so it's all kind of dark and mysterious and chaotic in my brain. I don't know quite how to greet anyone. Is anyone still hanging on to the negativity I heard when I was driving over here? And I walk through the door, and of course, people are on best behavior, but if you can read people pretty good, you know who's imitating and who's actually on deck, right? And last time I experienced this, the whole family was amazing. I mean, every single person was phenomenal, loving. The parents were way past any of their troubles, and it was just a beautiful thing. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, wow, think of all the arguments and all the turmoil of raising kids of all different ages to get to this point. And now they're just on cruise control. The parents are sitting there in their 70s, just looking around the room going, man, I made five great kids. And they happen to marry five great people. And the grandkids are all amazing grandkids. You know, no one's perfect. But they're sitting in a level of success that I think is just as complex as an entrepreneur creating a business, you know, some eBay or some PayPal or something like that, right? The other thing to remember is that luck has a lot to do with certain levels of mega success, right? The thing I bumped into a lot when I moved to California was that, you know, I was 18 very quickly after I got here, and again, I'm totally solo by myself, no cash coming in from the family to support me or anything like that. And so I'm hanging out with some of the most amazing 18-year-olds. I worked in Jim Hall Racing, which is a racing course by Jim Hall Jr. in Ventura for a really short bit. Then I got into the tax software, then I got into video games. So I'm hanging out with kids that are set 18 years old. They're sponsored by, you know, Firestone and Pirelli and, you know, all these crazy, you know, race car manufacturers. And then, you know, I was hanging out with dudes that had made a lot of money in software. One of my friends I rented a room from was slightly younger than me. So I meet him just, man, I must be like 3 months into being 18. This kid, I met him on his 18th birthday. I went to his retail store in Camarillo, walked around his software store when they used to sell, you know, brick and mortar software. And he was closing deals, $60,000 deals with the military at 1987 at just 18 years old. He had a beautiful car out front. I'm renting a room in his house. Now, his dad fronted him $25,000 to start the company, I believe, and which is a lot of money, but honestly, he parlayed that thing up very quickly by himself, tenacious guy. He eventually got into video games, oddly enough, learned how to program, and I think sold his company, probably with some shareholders, but the rumor was he sold it for $400 million, right? So when I was 18, hanging around these other guys that weren't taking no for an answer when it came to life, man, I sat there and went, Jesus, I got no excuse not to do my very best at what I can do, right? But it's a, you know, when you go off in those worlds, it's very tough to live a normal life. And you pay a huge price when it comes to isolation. And again, you could be married with 10 kids and feel utterly disconnected and isolated because the trials and tribulations that you're fighting on a daily basis are so over the head of your kids and maybe even over the head of your spouse that you can't come home and really feel like you've been hurt. And you won't dislike your spouse or dislike your children because they don't understand. You're just going to need an alternate third-party place to go to have that conversation. And I've seen several marriages in my lifetime go belly up because of this formula where the husband or the wife, they're hanging out within their business circles and they go home and there's nothing that their spouse can do to understand them. So they meet someone of the opposite sex or whatever sex they prefer. They start engaging, they start having like-minded conversations and they go, you know what, I can't go home to my wife or my husband anymore. Let's hook up. Let's do our thing. And they end up cheating on the side for a little while, and then they inform their spouse that they're leaving them. And, of course, the kids are destroyed, depending on how old they are. And it's a rough ride. And this serendipitously happened a lot, I think, in the 80s when, you know, being an entrepreneur is one of the only ways to really create any job security. You know, one of the other things I was told, and again, you have to listen between the lines. When I was working on my first video games, which was a subsidiary of Activision, this guy showed up at our studio, which is a beach house in Oxnard, California. And he wasn't really related to our company in terms of tasks and stuff we're doing. He was just a friend of someone. And he was probably in his mid-40s. And he looked at me and he said, he was having some existing, talking to someone else in the room, but then, you know, when someone turns to you and finishes a sentence, you feel like it's all pointed at you. It was one of those kind of moments. And he said, you know, I realized, why should I work 8 hours for someone else when I can work 12 hours for myself? And right off the bat, at first, I'm like, oh, yeah, well, sure, man, we should all work for ourselves and da-da-da-da, right? But what I really didn't hear at the time, at whatever, 19 years old when I heard this, was you're working 12 hours a day. What he also didn't mention was every day of the year. Weekends, weekdays, holidays, right? There's no rest for the wicked, right, as they say. There's no rest for an entrepreneur that's on their own. You have to work around the clock constantly because there's always some shit coming up, usually. Now, it's not the truth for everyone. Again, some folks in my hometown, again, we had tons of little businesses. We had a welding family. We had a car repair family, car sales family. They had managed to work out over 20, 30 years, a beautiful pipeline where they didn't have to work on the weekends. Now, the guy that sold cars definitely had to sell cars on Saturday and Sunday. But then they just build a workforce where they don't have to do it personally. I tell you that because I want you to understand the very depths of what this sort of bigger-than-life success that you might be angsting to try entails. It's brutal. And I mean brutal, unless you're fortunate, right? But I think that no matter how fortunate you are, unless you're just absolutely in the right place at the right time, it's brutal enough that you'll say that brutal is sort of the average feeling you're going to have, right? Whatever you would define as a higher struggle than brutal is, it's fairly familiar to you. You'll run into that realm as well. It's almost abusive. You know, I mean, it's like brutal's pretty bad, but, you know, it's sort of a last man standing art to really fight for it. And I will tell you that, you know, in my last couple of years, I've learned something very interesting that I thought I would pass on to you just to give you kind of a sort of an inside track to what you might run into that you have not run into yet. I've met some people that are extremely wealthy, which obviously means, and they're self-made, okay? No one gave them anything, and they worked their ass off. And of course, there is a level of success, or luck, involved with their success. They were at the right place at the right time, right? Doesn't mean they didn't work their asses off, okay? But they just had a kind of a perfect mix of time and place. And, you know, I've worked with these individuals to raise money for some of my own efforts. And there's an interesting thing that they kind of have this kind of unwritten rule, which is if you don't have a bunch of money, and I mean a bunch of money, no matter what you've done with your life, they pretty much start listening to you with the third strike already in their head. They look at you and they say, well, if you're so smart, then why aren't you rich? And at first, it sounds super kind of offensive. You know, you're like, well, what do you mean? You know, just because I don't worship money, I'm an idiot, you know? And when you really think about it for a little while, there's a little bit of truth. No matter how cynical you want to be about their opinion and their myopic focus on money, what they really tell you is money's very hard to make. It is. And if they are fortunate enough to amass millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of money, they work their ass off for it. And if you're going to ask for their money to be donated to your effort, you need to prove that you understand what you're asking for. Because if you don't take it away from their purse and risk it, they could give it to their family members. They could spend it on their own adventure, their own next idea. It's not your idea, right? And so there's this interesting kind of come to Jesus moment with the worshiping of money and the collecting of money. You sort of exit the old way of thinking, where just having a family and that porch swing and some wood to you know, fiddle on or whittle on. You live in more of a mathematical world, which has very little emotion. Sure, if you succeed, you're going to have a lot of good emotion. But let me tell you, until you succeed, it's not neutral. It's sort of negative. It's a struggle. Because it's your job to be cynical about what you think you're going to do. You can be very optimistic and create the reality distortion field around yourself to get things done. And you should. And the reality distortion field for people that are wealthy is one of complete productivity. You can't walk into a room with some folks in the world and say that you can't do it or that it can't be done, because their entire life they have neglected, or I should say they have refused to allow that opinion to be a part of their life. They're like, you know what, I made my whole life out of everything that was impossible. So don't tell me things are impossible. And you know what? They're right. You know, I said a long time ago on this show, one of the other themes that I love is to do the impossible, what people think can't be done. I love it. And once you start thinking in your brain that everything that people think is impossible is possible, man, it's a great life. You won't always find the solution right away just because you have that opinion. But you will pull things out of yourself that you never thought you were capable of doing. And it doesn't have to be the big, giant, multi-million dollar corporation you're creating. It could be as simple as you are in that second category where you're living a wonderful life with your family. Maybe right now you don't even appreciate it. But after listening to this, maybe you kind of put the pieces together and you're going, yeah, you know what? I do have an awesome life. I just thought maybe there was something out there that was better than what I already had. But, you know, confirming that it's not out there, or if it's out there, it's not worth the trouble, maybe gives you some solace. But maybe the thing that you think is impossible is something as simple as your spouse is going to bring you a very challenging piece of information. Something that you wouldn't think you'd be able to hear and tolerate, perhaps even stay with them, but somehow you do. And that becomes your defining moment as a hero. The decision you make under pressure, right? Maybe your spouse ran off with a bunch of money and went and bought something they weren't supposed to buy. And maybe it's frivolous and stupid. Maybe it's a business venture that they want to go out and do. Or maybe they were unfaithful. Right? That's actually a really good one, being unfaithful. You think, there's no way I could ever hear about my spouse being unfaithful and ever keep the relationship going. Obviously, if they want to leave, they're going to go ahead and leave. But if they're like, oh my God, I slipped, it's so stupid, I just feel awful, and I now learned my lesson, blah, blah, blah. Now, obviously, they do it multiple times, you might want to reconsider. But don't let other people infect your mind unless you agree with it. Think about it very deeply, right? I hope this show has stayed very consistent with the notion that, you know, my opinions are my opinions, and you're encouraged to totally disagree and love what you love that's completely contrary to what I like, and reinforce yourself, fortify, right? We need the world to be happy. We need the world to be productive. I think we need the world to create things, whether it be people, moments of happiness, random acts of kindness, improve themselves where they thought they couldn't improve themselves. You know, as just sort of a digression along those lines, we see all the time, especially on the internet, folks that are either born with disabilities or inherit disabilities due to a tragic accident or some illness. Maybe they lose a limb, a leg, a hand, something that they think prior to that moment they couldn't possibly continue life not having those things, obviously. But the video that you see in your, you know, your Facebook home feed is all about someone who either, you know, they got there, but they went ahead, moved past it, and were able to continue life as if it didn't happen. They found different ways around it, right? Celebrate the tiny micro successes that you have in your life every single day. The fact that you wake up in the morning is one success. Brush your teeth in the morning. If you got all your teeth, well, that's another little success. If your body is generally the size that you're okay with, or you're on your way to the perfect shape that you want to be, well, every day is a little tiny success. If your car starts in the morning, that's a success. You collect your paycheck, that's a success. If your child smiles and laughs, a true, wholehearted laugh, that's a success. Right? Don't worry about the big ones. You hunker down in something that you love. All that big stuff, money and fame, if that's something that you think you're interested in, I assure you fame is not something that you want. Go see my episode on fame. Money, well, I've seen it corrupt absolute, man. I've seen it destroy people's lives. I've seen it set standards higher than anyone can maintain. They blow it all and they lose it. I've seen them stockpile it in bank accounts, and they're just unhappy people. Just grumpy all the time. Because in their mind, they work super hard, which they are correct. But there's always somebody wanting to take it. You know, and I, as a person who's needed investment from time to time, I've been the person that has to be the next person in line that says, well, you know, we're looking for funds. And, you know, if you're an investor, then I hope that you've dealt with the fact that we need you to part with some of your money. And I've made the mistake of asking for too much money. And I made the mistake of accepting too little money. But it's always based on the personality of the person that I'm looking across the table at. I hope you feel me. Hope this was useful. We could probably do two or three parts on success. I just wanted to get the fundamentals out the door so that you can take that moment of angst and instead of it just being a ball of angst that is almost impossible to look into, you're able to zoom it up, look inside it, and go, you know what? This whole ball of angst I have is really just a bunch of bullshit. It doesn't really have any substance. It's really kind of enigmatic, you know. It doesn't have any form. It doesn't have any direction. It's just me thinking, oh my God. You know, I turn on the television and I see these morons get these reality shows, and boy, it looks like they're so happy. If you think anyone's happy on a reality show, wait a couple of years and go into TMZ.com and see how their life is being absolutely ripped apart by the public. They can't go in public without having photographs taken of them. And the funny thing is that on average, 99% of people on reality shows were nobodies before the reality show started. And they're really nothing more than a nobody afterwards. They just become oddities for reality, you know, for folks that want to see other people suffer. I guess before I sign off, let me throw this one more thing at you, because it just occurred to me. It's very, very important. I've said it in other episodes, but since we're on the subject, let's repeat it. If you're really successful, there are some people around you that will be in competition with you. And they won't really consciously know they're in competition with you. They'll just resent the fact that you're succeeding, and they wish they were in your shoes. And sometimes they go through stages where they resent you at first, and then they support you. Sometimes it's the opposite. They support you, and the more you succeed, they resent you. Sometimes folks will be in utter pain, and they think you're rolling in cash, and they want you to subsidize their lives, which doesn't fix anything, right? Being broke, as I've said several times on different shows, is the mother of invention. It gets you to that next level. So if you live a balanced life, you got the softball games for your daughter and the baseball games for your son. Sure, there's little microcosms of envy here and there, keeping up with the Joneses, keeping up appearances, and all that kind of crap. But if you think that's bad, go be a successful entrepreneur. Sometimes they get thrilled to share the experience with you, and sometimes there's this weird silence where they're just saying, God, how can I think that guy out of his success so I don't ever have to hear it again? You know? It got to a point where, before I even went to my 10-year anniversary for high school, I showed up. Well, I had already figured it out, right? I was like, okay, the most annoying thing you can do at a reunion is to go and talk about yourself. And it was funny because we had a few people that did exactly that. They just walked up and said, what are you doing with your life? And it was like talking to Farva from was it Super Troopers? You start talking, and then like two words into your sentence, they're immediately on top of you telling you what they did, because they really just want to talk about themselves, right? But luckily, everyone I know from my class matured out of that. There's only a couple people really living on that. But you get to the point where you might succeed so much that you really don't want to tell anybody anything about what you do, because you don't make anyone feel bad, just depending on what they're doing. And then you have that great human being in the world that just cheers you on. They love what you're doing. They feel awesome about what you do. And they know that you feel the same way about them, right? But I've got friends of mine who have that type B life, where they have this beautiful family, this beautiful job. They live in a great area of the world, and they don't think that they're a success. And so when you ask them what they do, they kind of, you know what I'm doing? I'm just doing the old 9-to-5, blah, blah, blah. And they think that they're a failure, sort of down inside. They feel like they had the sort of the skill set to be something bigger than what they ended up, and they're not willing to celebrate the amazing successes that they've had. And I'm always the guy that says, well, you've got what I want, and you think I've got what you want. I guarantee you, we're both full of shit, right? Right? We should be happy for what we've been able to cram into this little life of ours, right? What do we get, 80 years if you're lucky? 100 years if you're super lucky? But I mean, shit, even if you live to be 100, I don't know how much new shit you can do after 80. I've got some friends who do it. But again, if you're young, you're in your 20s hearing me, it's time to go, baby. It's time to go. Get going. Roll with it. Take risks. Have fun. Don't risk your life, hopefully. But get out there and fail. And pick yourself back up and succeed. And then fail. And then succeed. You know, whatever you got to do. Because by the time you hit your 30s, you're going to probably meet somebody. You're going to meet someone, and you're going to want to start settling down. And if you haven't taken care of those risks and those successes and those failures and all that good stuff before you're 30, trying to do that from scratch in your 30s is really rough. But here's the beautiful Paul Harvey to the story. If you have done nothing but fail in your 20s, but you risked and you tried, by the time you get to your 30s, you can continue going in that algorithm because you have mechanisms in your mind that work. And you're like, now I could do the same sort of thing, this sort of entrepreneurial risk thing, but I don't have to spend so much energy doing it because I know how to work smarter. So what took 10 calories takes 1 calorie now. And I know when to get in, and I know when to pull out, and I know when to plan. I know how long to plan. So that with the time and money I have left in my life, which would be your time around your family or whatever, your relationship, you've got enough time. But there's a lot of incredibly successful people that didn't start anything until their late 20s, early 30s. So don't think that what I'm saying is somehow an absolute. There's no hard rule about anyone succeeding in this world. There are actors that didn't act one day until they were in their 40s. And then there's other ones that didn't act until their 50s. And they became household words, right? All right, there you go. DeepThoughtsRadio.com for all the feeds. There's video if you're on audio, audio if you're on video. YouTube and vid.me for video. There's iTunes, Google Play, and the website for the RSS feed. We have a locked Facebook group. Just search on Deep Thoughts Radio and you'll find it. I think that's the URL, actually. I think like I created a page for it, and then I created a group, and I think page ate up the custom URL. But just go to the website and click on Facebook if you want to get in. A lot of great folks. It's about 80% shares from you guys and about 20% from me. So it's not just coming and listening to a dude, you know, indoctrinate you. So anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.